All right. This is Derek Warren here with Sheriff Coons, part of our monthly series of interviews. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you bet, Derek. I always enjoy coming in.
Yeah, we got a bit more of a serious topic here. It is about mental health in the jails. I know that's been a big topic of yours more recently, especially because it's been a bit difficult to try to get help for these people that need it in the jail. So we'll just start with that. What has it been like to try to help people with mental health problems in the jail?
Well, you're right. This is a topic that that I am passionate about because I see it. I see the problems. And I have been, I'll admit, I have been somewhat critical of Illinois Department of Human Services over their lack, you know, of ability, their lack to help us with these people. And to put it, to see it from, now I understand there are reasons, there are problems that, you know, make this situation this way, but to see it from my perspective, with the Safety Act, we have cut our jail population drastically. We don't have as many people in jail now because there is no cash bail, and most everyone is aware of that, realizes that. So we generally don't put people in jail. People don't stay in jail. We're running at about 60% population to what we ran before the Safety Act. And I'm not complaining about that. That's not the topic. But my point is, we don't put people in jail. We don't keep people in jail unless there's a mental health issue and you are found unfit to stand trial. Then you're in jail and you stay there. And to explain that, it's not our prosecutor's fault. It's not our judge's fault. It's not the court system. But when someone is found unfit to stand trial, and they're evaluated, found by a professional that they are can't stand trial, they are remanded to the custody of the state Department of Human Services. They don't have the beds, they say, the space, or the availability, maybe, of staff to take these people. So what do you do with them, Derek? You keep them in jail.
Yeah.
You can't just turn them loose. You can't, and if you can't get them in to DHS, they stay in jail for months. And
the next obvious question is, do they have this
DHS?
DHS. Do they have anybody that they send in routinely to check on these people? Like, is there a next step to that?
No. And this started really got worse during COVID. And we had a lot of problems during COVID. I understand that. And I am not saying DHS doesn't, you know, have issues beyond their control, but I'll get to that maybe a little more later. But during COVID, you know, they didn't have the space, and we had, you know, everybody suffered through that. But if you have someone that's, you know, seriously has mental issues, is not able to stand trial, and we've done things to try to mitigate this, to try to help, but I'm here to tell you, I will admit, they do not get better under my care. You know, the best thing at times that we try to do is to keep them safe, sometimes from themselves, to keep our staff safe, and to keep them healthy. I currently have a correctional officer that's out on workman's comp because of an incident with a DHS remanded inmate that was determined to escape. Now, of course, he didn't escape, but that correctional officer was hurt. And that does happen from time to time. You know, I'm not blaming everything that's happened here on DHS or on this particular one-time situation. It happens. Sometimes officers get hurt. But it just sort of underscores my point. It's sort of heartbreaking. I mean, I know we're the police, and we're the jail, and we're correctional officers, and our job is to detain people. But when you see someone that comes in that are struggling, and they are found unfit, and they, you know, it's going to be months, and you watch them deteriorate. Now, we have put measures in place. Heartland Human Services has been a great help to us. We also have Lawrence County for crisis intervention, which means suicide, but Heartland Human Services has been helping us. But really, we are not a facility that can medicate. And it's not the right word, but we can't make someone take medication. We're not set up for it. And even though we have medical staff there still, we can't force someone to take medications. And a lot of times I think, and, you know, my opinion, that's a big thing. And the people suffer for it. And they tend absolutely to get worse under our care. That's tough. All of our officers are now CIT trained, which is a great thing. It gives them tools, understanding, and knowledge to deal with mental health crisis. But we are still, you know, not a facility. You're right, not completely trained or set up to handle this. And I do want to say, because I thought about this before I came in, I have been pretty critical of IDHS. And I understand if there's a shortage of staff, it's hard to hire people. There's a shortage of space. Okay. But why is that, Derek? I mean, this is a problem. This is a problem everywhere. And why is that? I mean, where does that solution lie? As a state, we're failing. We're failing at this. And since I am right in the middle of this, you know, I am trying to do the best I can, but what is there yet that I can do to help mitigate this or keep these people safe? But as a state, as a society, hey, we're failing badly at this.
Now, has there been communication with DHS saying that you need help like this, but they just don't have the staff to help you?
You know, I think in the last couple months, it's gotten maybe a little better, and we have communicated with them. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure I'm positive. They're good people. They've got a job to do. I mean, I know they're serious about it, but what resources are we lacking here? You know, we need to, in my opinion, address this and put the resources towards it to help with this problem. Now, even though I'm critical, do I have all the answers? Of course I don't, you know, and that is something you need to look at when you're ready to be critical about an organization or how things are. You know, do you have the answers yourself? You know, I don't, but I think as a state, we need to put more resources towards this.
Yeah, definitely. You say you don't have answers. Do you have any ideas, like maybe possibly something that could, like a partnership with somebody that could benefit something like
on
that?
A state level, you know, I don't know. Yeah, we have a problem here when it comes to mental health.
Yeah, it's something that you may not really think about it in the jail per se, because you think about people getting arrested, like, oh, they're in there, they're safe. Well, they may not be entirely safe from themselves, that type of thing.
No, and you see it the longer sometimes people are in there, and they have mental health issues, the more they deteriorate. And, you know, you can see it. They get frustrated, too, because, you know, they can't completely control the situation either. And they become frustrated, and it makes it more dangerous for the staff. That is the other aspect of this. Yes, you know, it breaks my heart to see some of this happen, occur, and see people deteriorate. But also, my motive is if I can get them any kind of help and stabilize them even a little, it's a safer environment for the staff to work in. You know, and that's a big thing, because it's a tough job, too. You know, I have a lot of respect for those correctional officers that in my jail, they deal with this on a on a daily basis every shift, and yet they come to work. You know,
yeah,
we've got some good people, and I'm very thankful for that. But I don't think that the Effingham County Jail should be one of the, you know, I bet if you ranked the facilities in the county of Effingham that housed mental health patients, I'm going to say patients, I bet Effingham County Jail ranks right up there, you know, and that is, and that's hard, you know, that's hard because we're not, even though we try, we do our best, we are just not really qualified for that.
Yeah, it's not something that you think about right off the bat whenever you bring an inmate in. Now, as far as we kind of talked on medication as well, there is and something that you've talked with the county board about opiate treatment as well. I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Well,
because that could be a nice off-ramp for them to kind of get better and get better mentally if there's some sort of drug problem.
Well, and before we start on that, I will say we often see that people with you know, and I am not a doctor. I'm not using the right terms, but people who suffer from a lot of the mental illness, not all of them, of course, but some of them, they also have a drug dependency, and that makes it worse.
Yeah.
But those two traits are often shared. What is available? I'm going to talk about this. It's not set up yet. It's not been approved, but I'm pretty excited about it. What I am doing is a couple of years ago, there was a class action lawsuit over the opioid epidemic. And we did see it, you know, the heroin, prescription drugs, fentanyl, those are all opioids. And we, along with several other municipalities, government agencies, have received money from this class action lawsuit, and it was paid by the manufacturers and some pharmaceutical companies. That's a lot of money. So Effingham County received funding, and what's nice about this is it's not tax money. Oftentimes, you know, if we get grants for different projects that we want to do, we're always looking for grants. But I am not naive to think that grants are not tax money. Maybe they weren't collected in your immediate area, but grants are tax money. And in the end, you know, that it comes from the government. But this was settlement money. It's not tax money. We have a chance to, I think, do some exciting things with it. I propose that currently, and it's by statute, every inmate that comes into the county jail must be medically evaluated within 14 days. And we do that. This is something that I implemented a few years ago. We have medical staff on duty, and we those people are evaluated by them. I propose that every inmate that comes into the Effingham County Jail to stay be mentally evaluated. And what we would look for is someone who is suffering from an opioid addiction. But a byproduct of this also is they'd be, maybe during this evaluation, we would pick up on or discover other problems that deal with mental health that need watching or treatment. So that's a plus. That's a byproduct, a positive, you know, positive outcome also. But if we find someone that is suffering from an opioid addiction, we can offer to treat those people, to treat them in the jail with our medical staff and pay for this opioid addiction medication. They do have injections. There are a couple different types of medication that if you know someone, I'm not going to use the right terminology, but if they're clean, if they haven't ingested any opioids in so many days, they can take this injection. It will curb some of the withdrawal side effects, and it will block receptors. So if they use opioids again, they won't get that high, and it also makes them somewhat physically ill. So it takes away that It helps take away some of the cravings, and it takes away that incentive, I guess, to use. Though, but they're very expensive, those drugs are. But we could do that in our jail, pay for these medications, and then when these people are released, it's called a warm handoff, direct them, put them in the services of a healthcare provider on the outside that will continue their treatment and continue to counsel them. So they have a better chance of becoming healthy and not being under the influence, addicted to opioids. I'm really excited. And probably one of the biggest thing about this program, though, is the level of cooperation or excitement that I've gotten from so many other organizations. You know, I started with our healthcare provider in the jail, Advanced Correctional Healthcare, and they were, you know, willing to take on this extra work. Effingham County Probation, which is probably better versed in programs like this than I am, but they were absolutely helpful and got on board and are ready to start this program. The state's attorney's office the same way, because, you know, you have to have your prosecution will have a part in this also. There's an outside firm, General Care Consultants. They partnered up. I mean, I can't say enough about them, because this, Derek, this is not a moneymaker for anybody. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't want anyone to think, oh, hey, there's settlement money and everybody's in line to make money off of it. This drug addiction treatment is not a moneymaker. And the same way with Heartland Human Services, they've been good to us and they want to partner in this for the, you know, to supply the counselors, to screen people, to help treat. And what's nice about it is these people that I've mentioned, they're all local. You know, it's our community. So that if we can start treatment in the jail and then hand them off to Heartland Human Services for counseling, to General Care Consultants, there's not a gap. There's not a stop there. And I think they're more apt to succeed. You can tell I'm excited about this. I enjoy talking about it. But I will say it's not been approved. The county board is in charge of these funds. And, you know, I respect that. They have to decide how they would best be used in our county. And there was, some criticism that came up, because I have to estimate how many people, you know, would actually go through this program. And that's sort of hard. I mean, I don't know if it'd be 20 a year or six a year, like I put in the programming. And it was brought up that, well, that's a lot of money only to help six people. And there's, you know, that's not exactly right, because everyone is going to benefit from this mental health screening. But to put this in my perspective, you know, to explain how I feel about it, just think, though, even if we only saved, I use that term a little loosely, one person, okay? We take one person and change them from an inmate, from being incarcerated, to maybe a guy who has a job downtown as a waiter, as an oil change guy, or, I mean, just anything respectable. And he is back to being a father, and he is paying rent, but hoping to buy that little house down on Second Street. Just think about that for a minute. That is a huge windfall to the community. If we can take someone from being an addicted inmate back to being a mother who's got her kids and takes care of them, or, you know, or to a guy working down at the grocery store, that's a huge win. And that's how I see it. Yes, it's a lot of money. And I get that. We have to be responsible, and there are checks and balances. The just because I think, you know, I like this program, I've got all these people partnered, you know, to go with it, it's still, you know, not my choice. We have to see if we get funding for it. But I hope so. I hope so. And we'll see if we how much good we can do.
Yeah, it's one of those programs that doesn't really have a downside except for the money required to make it happen. So, because it's great for the inmates, it's great to help you guys have less on your plate as far as officers. And I was in attendance at that meeting that you were referencing with the county board, and they seemed receptive, but their biggest question was, like you said, the money, but also with the Safety Act, you've got those that are released pre-trial. They were saying maybe, what about those people? Like, could that be some part of their pre-trial conditions?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think I mentioned that. But the Illinois State Pre-Trial Services, they have an office in our courts building. They are on board and partnered with this plan. Because I knew that you cannot do things pre-trial, you know, before the trial, before sentencing. You can't do things like that without pre-trial being involved. Now, we're not 100% sure yet what their involvement would be, pre-trial services, but they, you know, I met with them, and they think it's a great idea. They're on board. They, you know, they pledge support. And same way with the state's attorney. You know, I'm not quite sure yet what that involvement will be, but they recognize the plan and are on board with it. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I missed that. But you're right. I mean, you know, it's money, but it's also a lot of time and work, too, you know, for everybody. And I'll admit this, we are, at my work, we are cops, you know, and cops think about enforcing the law. They think about, you know, arrests. My correctional officers, they think about incarceration and how that job works. And yes, how to keep people safe and how to keep themselves safe. So this is really, this is out of our wheelhouse somewhat. I get that. Cops, you know, think different than the average person, I think. But gee, there is just so much, I think, to be gained here if we can pull it off, if we can do it and make it work. There's so much to be gained that this opportunity is here. The funding is here. Let's take it.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you were looking at all kinds of different ways to of funding, and that this has kind of been handed to you through the program or the settlement money. Is there any sort of federal level funding that you might be able to get for something like this? Because mental health is kind of on the forefront right now, nationally as well.
And that was brought up to me, that I need to consider that, because the opioid settlement funds won't last forever. Again, I've got to stress that I don't have any of this money. None of this is, you know, is approved. But if I do get opioid settlement money to run this program, I need to consider and plan for how we're going to continue it if we're successful. And that is when we would hopefully be able to find grants, find alternative ways to fund it, because money is always an issue. You know, I tell people my job would be so much easier if, number one, I was a little bit smarter, and number two, I had unlimited funding. Yeah. But we don't, you know, and I pay property taxes. Most of our funding does not come from property taxes, but still, I pay property taxes, and I don't really want to pay any more. But this thing hasn't been given to me yet, but yes, this is a great opportunity to do, I think, what we need to be doing. I mean, that's our jobs in the community. And you know, now I'm quite a bit older than you know, all my police officers, and I've only got a couple years to go. So that is staring me in the face. This is not my last project if I get it, but I've only got so much time to get things like this done. So I'm excited.
if it goes well, it could very well be one of your most consequential ones that you get done, because it could have so much good that it could do for everybody involved.
I think so, yeah, if it works. But again, it's complicated, a lot of moving parts. If we would get funding for this project, we would do our very best, and you know, we would see if it worked. And if it needed changing, we need to have open minds to change with what, you know, needs to happen. Or if it doesn't work, we need to have the courage to say, you know what, this wasn't quite right. We didn't get it right the first time. I mean, with all these people joined in as partners, I can't believe it wouldn't have a positive effect. But still, you know, it's a plan that we have never tried before. So I would like to find out, but we'll see.
With any new thing, there's usually some kinks that need to be worked out. So
of course,
that's always a part of it. But I kind of want to circle back around. Is there any final thoughts on the mental health aspect in the jail that you wanted to touch on?
Well, we have implemented some counseling with Heartland Human Services, and the 708 board helped us immensely with that. And I need to express my gratitude to both those organizations. You know, when I first pitched a program to the director of Heartland Human Services, she said, you know, this is our community, and we feel somewhat responsible for those people. And my gosh, I could have cried right then. I thought, this is the organization I need to partner with. And again, nobody is getting rich over this. You know, it's a hard job. There's not per se money in it, but they have helped us. Is it enough? Well, probably not. It's better than what we had, and I'm very appreciative. But the medication, you know, we can't do again. And I'm not advocating that we do such things, but we still need help. You know, things aren't perfect. We're working at it. We've tried to, you know, to supplement that. And, you know, Effingham County taxpayers are helping us fund that, the mental health, but it makes a much safer jail, and something, you know, has to be done. We can't just stand by when you see something that, you know, isn't right, that needs fixing. I mean, it's like your obligation. You have to move on it. So,
well, and it kind of goes back to the core of what a sheriff does. Like, you try to do everything you can to make sure those people don't come back into the jail again. And this could be another way to prevent them from making the same mistakes.
Well, that would be great. But, you know, that sort of shocked me, what you just said, what a sheriff does. Derek, I'm not exactly sure maybe what a sheriff does too. But we try to do the right thing. I shouldn't make light of that. We try to do the right thing. My officers and correctional officers, telecommunicators, the people that work there are all vested in this community. You know, we're also a part of this community, and that's a big part of their self-worth, is serving the community. So yes, we've got a problem here. I shouldn't complain so much. I don't want the people out there that are listening, you know, to think that this is all so hopeless. It's not. We're working on it, but it sure is frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, like with any process through government, it takes a while for it to go through, inch by inch, as you might say.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, that's one nice thing about Effingham. There are things sometimes we disagree on. Maybe we squabble a little. But we have a good relationship with our elected officials, our county board. Our county board is good. I mean, they're good people, and they, you know, take their job seriously. The other elected officials, you know, sometimes we disagree here and there, but they're all, I consider, my friends. They, you know, they work hard for the good of the county, whether it's their specific job or not. You'll never hear one of them say, that's not my job, you know. And it's the same way with the surrounding people. The city administrator at the city, I really like. Chief Jason McFarland. He's a friend of mine. He would do anything to help us, and I would help him. So we, you know, it's like we have, we're all part of the community, and we're all, I think, service minded. It's a great thing about Effingham.
Yeah, tight knit, and all have the same goal in mind. So that's always good to have it all lined up moving forward.
I think so. It's one thing that I really appreciate about my community, and it's something I'm going to really miss, you know, when I'm gone, being a part of that. I've been very lucky to be able to participate and work within this community, you know, like I do. I'll really miss that.